Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Our guest today is Jody Detchen. She is a author of the new book, The Next Smart Step, How to Overcome Gender Stereotypes and Build a Stronger Organization. Jody, welcome to the show.
Hi, David. How are you?
I am having more fun than one should be allowed. That's what I'm telling you. More than one fun should be allowed today. It's all good. It's all good. Now, you know, this topic is one that has been talked about a lot. It's certainly getting a lot of press and a lot of discussion in terms of organizations today. Yeah. It's a topic that also can sometimes scare organizations a little bit and make CEOs and other HR professionals a little nervous, because remember, we've been taught, especially HR that's been around a long time, that everybody should be very balanced and talked to the same way, and they think they're doing it that way. So what can you tell the audience about, maybe set the stage of where we are today in 2021 versus maybe even 2020?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is that a lot has happened. And I'll even go back a little bit further and talk about, like, I think about 2017, 2018, when the Me Too movement came. And then now we've had the BLM movement in the last year. And I think what's happened is that there's been a lot more focus on, oh my gosh, we have systematically left out a lot of people. And so there's a lot of noise in the machine. And I think where we're at in 2021 is this willingness to go out and raise awareness. So you see a ton of organizations that are out there really talking about the need for unconscious bias training and waking people up and doing all those kinds of things. And so I think we're at the cusp of something great. The question will be, though, can we move beyond the awareness raising and move into action orientation and really change the fundamental assumptions that we've built our organizations and systems and structures on?
So I think you're right. A lot has certainly changed in the last, even 5-10 years, if you want to go back even further. And, you know, organizations have been struggling because they have systems in place that have been around for a long time. Yeah. And there are certainly, when you think about it, the challenges of larger organizations, right? Organizations of maybe 10, 15, 20,000, maybe even 5,000 people and above. But the bulk and majority of organizations across the country is small business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's like 80% of all the businesses across the country. And there is not necessarily this understanding of how to handle it, especially with owners that don't particularly know a lot about this or have been set in their ways for X number of years. What do you say to them?
Yeah, it's interesting because when you look at when organizations are smaller and then many organizations want to scale, for example, and what happens is that it's a heck of a lot harder to change once you've gotten bigger than it is when you're small. So by investing in thinking about this early on now as you're small, it's a heck of a lot easier to change. Now, I'll give you an example because my business is, you know, small, medium sized business, and we're hiring somebody right now. So what it means is that we're going out and we are being more inclusive in our hiring process. So we're going out and we're finding we're getting into different networks so we can actually have a broader base of people that we're interviewing and bringing into our system. So we're thinking about how do we make our processes more inclusive now, build that process today, and make it easy for us to be inclusive as we grow. Because if I have to now wait 10 years, 5 years, and now my process has been, you know, systematized and I'm repeated all the time and now it's easy, my bias is built in. But if I make it easy now, where bias is not built in, then that's the process that becomes easy. Does that make sense? So in other words, make it easy to be inclusive now.
No, I hear you. But you know, as you have said, and when we've talked, inclusion is right now a buzzword. It's something that is, it's almost taken a different meaning than it used to be. And everybody is saying, well, what about including me?
Right.
And so, you know, how do you have inclusion include the people that are being excluded in some ways? And I use that, I use an example. So I was talking to a business owner and he said, we believe we're inclusive. But one of the problems is as we're having these conversations, I'm actually having individuals come up to me that say, you know, I've been here for 20, 25 years. And now I feel like I'm being excluded because you're paying so much attention to others.
Yeah.
How do you handle that? And it's a legitimate question.
Well, I think what's interesting is that everybody's saying it now, right? So you've got people who have legitimately been excluded, and we know statistically that women, people of color, other different groups, people of disability have been historically excluded. And we know that through statistics. We also know that when we do surveys and looking at organizations, you can see where the exclusion happens, whether it happens within, for example, within a promotion process, whether it happens within decision making, whether it happens in the hiring process. So you can see and put a real systematic analysis, data analysis, analytical lens on it, so you can see where exclusion is actually happening. But then the key to this is that you have to have an inclusive process to solving it. So for example, you have to have people who are have been there 20, 25 years and done it a certain way and have felt included, who now maybe feel a little excluded, bring them into the process of how do we fix that? Because they also don't want anybody else excluded. So you have to have the people that have been traditionally excluded working with the people that have been traditionally included to solve the problem. And we work on it together to figure out what's the best approach for us to change the systems and the processes so that we can be inclusive around the board. For example, it could be something as simple as let's change the way we run meetings so that we do something simple where we have everybody write down their ideas and then literally go round robin around the room and have every single solitary person voice their view and don't do any analysis of the decision until everybody's had their chance to speak about it. That is just by definition of using a facilitation skill and more inclusive. So the key is to not include people who have been excluded by excluding the people who have been included. The key is to create a way of working that is inclusive. And if you're going to be exclusive because, for example, certain people are not going to be part of a particular decision-making process, then you just are transparent about who's involved and who is not and why you've made that decision.
One of the other realistic questions that comes up is the fact that, as you mentioned, Black Lives Matter and certainly that organization has in some ways created some problems by some of the actions that have been taken by some in those groups. And they have created in some cases, as again, not my opinion, but others have said, this fear of what could happen if you don't. There is social media that certainly attacks organizations that don't see eye to eye with as they are, or don't for example, organizations get targeted, individuals get targeted if they don't do what the organization says. Does that take away from or detract from the issue?
So I think the problem is we've got many levels of change happening. So we've got the societal change that's happening writ large, and then you've got the organizational change that's happening. And then you have the individual change that's happening. And so I think the key thing is to figure out where are the things that we can control. So let's focus on our organization because we're dealing with organizational leaders here on this show as well as HR leaders. So let's stick within the organizational constraints because I think it's going to be a lot easier for us to manage it there. The key thing that in our philosophy and our approach is that if we point out people and blame people for something that they said, so they made a mistake and they labeled somebody something, and it's a one-off. If we label them and ostracize them and blame them, then what will happen is all learning will cease. And not just sort of cease for that person, it'll cease for everybody. So what we suggest instead is let's take a learning mentality. Let's figure out where people's strengths and weaknesses are. So for example, in our book, we talk about Tom. Tom who's grown up in a homogenous business unit, and he hasn't had a lot of exposure to women in positions of power or people of color on his team. And so therefore, he doesn't have the skill sets to be able to know how to manage in a diverse team. Tom's going to stumble. And in our story, we talk about how Tom just doesn't include people, or he invites everybody to his club, which is predominantly white. And so the African-American male feels left out, for example. If we blame Tom for it, without giving him the chance to learn, then all we've done is made Tom feel like he's, you know, like really, really small, and he won't learn, and he'll actually be defensive, and then he'll fight it and all this other stuff. Instead, if we evaluate everybody and basically say, here's where your strengths are in terms of your inclusive skills, and here's where you don't have strengths. So for example, somebody could be an incredible facilitator, but not so good in terms of being able to work in a diverse team. So you don't have to worry about their inclusive facilitation skills, but you do have to worry about their ability to work in a diverse team. So we need to say, here's where you need strength, and then give the Toms of the world the chance to actually practice with these skills. Now, if Tom, after a year or two, maybe even bringing in some extra coaching, is not able to learn, then we have to say, look, Tom, time to move on. And let we have to cut our losses. But if Tom's been willing to learn and really builds those skills, then we have to support him in that process. It's not a switch. These are skills. They take time to learn. We have to give people the space to make mistakes.
We're talking with Jody Dechen. She is the author of The Next Smart Step, How to Overcome Gender Stereotypes and Build a Stronger Organization. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. And I got to tell you, Jody, you know, it is an interesting book. I had an opportunity to go through it and take an opportunity to take a look at it. What made you write the book?
We get asked this a lot. It's so funny because, you know, our first book, The Orange Line, was really about helping women to identify these internal assumptions that they've been socialized to and how to overcome them so they can get career success. And what we found was in our work with thousands upon thousands of women and managers is that it's not just women that have these problems. Men have them. Tons of excluded groups have had them because there's these stereotypes that exist. And as a result of these stereotypes, we swallow them hard. Like, for example, women believe they have to be perfect so they don't take risks in their career. It's a stereotype. They've swallowed it. They internalize it. They use it on themselves. So we realize that we need to name what these are, because then organizations are implementing these stereotypes as well. So what we decided to do is write a book that is extremely practically focused and give people the individual skills. So we give them the ability to identify the assumption and then reframe it so they can look at it with a different perspective. We talk about the specific skills that people need to be inclusive. And then we talk about the specific organizational changes, process changes, and cultural changes that need to happen to enable this to become default behavior. And our book is so practical. We decided we needed a how-to. Enough of the talk. Let's show people how to do this. So that's why we wrote the book. You take our book and you can actually implement it.
Now, you said we, and I do know that Kelly Watson also is a co-author with this. Tell me about Kelly. Tell me how you both joined to make this happen.
So it's so funny. So Kelly and I were part of this thinking group about a decade ago where we were trying to figure out how do you make organizations stronger. And as part of that, we decided we really connected strongly and we decided to do our research on women. And so Kelly and I decided after our first book to create a business around this with a really clear goal of, you know, making it a profit-based business and making it a business where we want to scale so we can increase our impact. Profit-based because we wanted to show other women and role model women that profitability is okay, that we can talk about profit and focus on it. So Kelly is, both of us have a really strong operational background. I was more in tech. She was more in product development type roles. And so we have this strong operational background and we decided to bring that to this work because what we'd seen was so much that there's a lot of talk about this stuff, a lot of, you know, one-off seminars on how to change your unconscious bias. And reality is we need to change the systems underlying it. So for us, it was really coming together as operations and a strategy approach to making inclusion a core part of the business.
No, it's awesome. And I know you're also the managing partner of Orange Grove Consulting, as well as the professor of management and academic MBA program at Suffolk University in Boston. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, you've got a lot going on. Obviously, you have plenty of free time. So, no, not really. I know how that works. So, you know, the reality is you've done a nice job of pulling together a how-to. And what I'm going to do in the next segment, we're going to talk more about the book and we're going to take some of the pieces in here and share with the audience some tips and tricks that they can do right now and make it happen. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, a news talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. Also podcasting now on your national podcast station. Click on it, like it, and listen. That's on the HR Power Hour. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Shulo, and today we're talking with Jody Dechen. She's the author of the book, The Next Smart Step, How to Overcome Gender Stereotypes and Build a Stronger Organization. You know, in the first segment, Jody, we talked about kind of an overview of where we are today. I want to talk a little bit more about the book. And you kind of talked a little bit about why you wrote the book and so forth. And one of the things right at the front is the introductionary. It talks part one, the challenge, barriers, and bias. Now, I think everybody in HR and most professionals understand unconscious bias. They understand, they know what that is. But you talk a little bit about flawed assumptions and bad habits. Yeah. Can you talk about that area? Because that's a little bit different than just unconscious bias.
Yeah. So what we found in our research, and this really came out of our original research back when we were just focusing on women, and then when we started applying it on men and on organizations, we saw the same thing, is that assumptions underlie all behavior, but the way it shows up is in bad behavior. So for example, let's just take the assumption, for example, that men have to show that they're strong, right? And so one of the ways this manifests is in a bad habit of interrupting other people. So you get the mansplaining, quote unquote, that you see that people talk about in the media. Well, it really is just a bad habit. So men mansplain, and not all men, of course, but these are some bad habits that many men exhibit. So the bad habit shows up, and that's what's visible. That's what we can see. And so what you have to do is peel back and say, why is it that man does that? And when you peel it back, it's because men have been socialized to say, I've got to show that I'm number one. I have to show that I'm stronger than everyone. So therefore, I better make sure that I hog the airspace and I speak so that people know. I signal my strength this way. Well, when you peel it back to the core assumption, then you can say, oh, well, is that true? Well, actually, it's not true. I don't actually need to do that, do I? I can actually feel okay about my opinions, and I can allow space for other people to speak, and that's all right. And by me allowing the space, I'm actually a stronger leader. And we call that reframing, and it's based on cognitive behavior psychology as well as influence research. And so what you do is when you get down to the underlying assumption, the unconscious bias, what you find is that you can actually shift the way you look at it. And so all of a sudden, for example, a lot of times what people say about mansplaining, then they label and blame the man, and then the man like tries to keep his mouth shut and all this kinds of stuff. And that behavior never works. Trying to stop the bad habit never works, because what you really have to do is get back to the underlying assumption and reframe it from there. And then practice new skill sets and habits on top of that new way of looking at the world.
How much does personality behavior come into this? If you're, for example, using, we talk a little bit about assessment work, right? So a lot of people understand their MBTI or their personality assessment and extroversion and introversion, and of course, thinking before you speak versus speaking before you think. How much, and you can even throw in if you want to do EQ, right? You know, assertiveness and some of the other areas of emotional intelligence. That is also a factor, is it not, in regards to why people do what they do? And some of it is not only learned behavior, but behavior that they cognitively do just because of who they are.
Oh, of course. For example, I'm a huge interrupter. You know, it's like I interrupt just because I get so excited energetically that I might interrupt somebody, so, which is my personality. And so there are, of course, all these other elements. But the problem we've got is that we have bifurcated the world, the way we've made things work. So when we think about how organizations have been designed, we've designed them for men with stay-at-home wives. And everybody laughs like, seriously? But or you have to think about when organizations really came to being. It was really in the post-industrial, well, in the industrial age, and then in the first part of the 1900s, right? So, you know, 1920, 1930, 1940, 1950, that's when organizations really came to be. And so many of the processes that we still have are still built on that very binary way of looking at the world. Women can be secretaries, men can be the leaders. There's still a ton of default behavior around the men are the natural leaders and the women are not. And you also see this binariness, for example, with race, white versus black. You see the exact thing. We tend to categorize in basically two categories, of which nobody falls in 100%. And so we have to think about that. I'll give you another example. Oftentimes, I was speaking with somebody who was doing, a senior executive who was doing some hiring, and basically told somebody, well, we've got to do the diversity hire. And so the thing is that when we say something like that, for example, the world's binary, right? Diversity or not diversity. And not diversity is the default. Well, not diversity essentially means white male. So therefore, if you say this is the diversity hire, the white male is the default is good and doesn't have to prove that they have the skill sets. But the diversity hire has to prove that they have the skill sets. So it's binary. That's why the personality piece and all those other aspects are important. But the way we've defined so much of our decision making has been defined on these binary categorizations of people. And that's why we shine a light on that, because it's just causing a lot of constriction in decision making and allowing us to not leverage the full capacity of talent that we've got available to us.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, you know, the research shows that, and not only does it show it, you can see it in the workplace, and that makes a lot of sense. Right. You know, I think it's important for organizations to think about it here in 2021, that there has been some shifting in demographics, and I'm sure you know that. And we had a demographer on a few weeks ago that talked about the shift in demographics, going back a little bit to the fact that there are more children staying at home and being homeschooled now than have been in a long time. A colleague of mine said, gosh, it feels like Little House on the Prairie has returned.
Yes.
Right? Because we're going back to homeschooling, which right or wrong, it's not right or wrong. It is what it is. And that may be a system failure at other levels, but it's also a reaction to COVID and to the fear that people have, which is, by all intents and purposes, certainly real. So I guess the question is, as you look at and you're looking here in 2021 and based on the research and the book and everything, has anything changed as we head into 2022 and 2023? Because some of those trends, while they may go back a little, don't look like they're going to go back a lot. And that's a question that has come up a lot from the HR community in terms of where's it going?
Yeah. So I think a couple of different things. I mean, we certainly know that there's been plenty written on the fact that women, especially Black and minority women, other, you know, Latina women, have been hit hard work-wise from COVID, because A, because of the traditional industries that they've been involved in, and B, because of what you're talking about, this dynamic of having to take care of kids. And that gets right back to that binariness that I was talking about. We've defined our society as women are the default parents. So therefore, they're the ones that should be homeschooling and should be taking care of the kids. And if in our first book, we've sort of debunked that myth, because when we do that, we, like, for example, one of the vaccines, many of the vaccines were co-developed by women. So let's just think about this for a minute. If we're going to send all the women back home, think about all the stuff that is not going to be, they're not going to, the problems that aren't going to be solved because those ideas are now homeschooling their kids. Why is it that childcare, for example, in 2021, is still a default individual decision, individual family decision? This should, in Australia, they gave everybody childcare. This was a fundamental societal failure, in my opinion, because of the binariness with which we define our society. Now, where is it going? So I don't believe that this is sustainable, and here's why. First off, women have been getting far more of the degrees than men. 60% of all people in higher ed are women getting degrees. The second thing is that the days of the stay-at-home mom as a 20-year project, it's really the exclusive purview of the very rich. Not very many people can afford it, and that's not going away. So I do think that it's going to go back. I think what's going to happen is that we're going to start to see how the world will be totally redefined. And I'm hoping that we're going to get a larger understanding that childcare is a two-family problem that we have to solve. And it's not just the family's problem, but it's society's problem. And the third thing, and I'll give you an example, already so many organizations are talking about parental leave versus the traditional maternity leave. So we're already seeing these changes. And I think the other thing that's happening demographic-wise is that a lot of these younger fathers don't want the sole responsibility of having the assumption that I have to earn it all. They don't want, I have two sons in their low 20s. They don't want to marry a woman that's going to make them have to sacrifice the family and their time with the family so that they can bring all the money. They want a whole life. So I think that there's other demographic trends that are going to counter this. And I really do think in that respect, it is going to be a temporary hit because of COVID.
No, I think you're right. And certainly I actually have seen where a lot of men are staying home, believe it or not. So that's another good sign in terms of the trends that are making that happen. Right. Of course, we're talking right now with Jodi Dechen. She's the author of the book. And by the way, you should go right on Amazon right this second and get it, because that's just the way it is. Is the
Thanks.
How to Overcome Gender Stereotypes and Build a Stronger Organization. I'm your host, David Chulo. And of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. You know, Jodi, in the book, and I want to talk about this in the next section, so I'll set the audience up. We have about a few more minutes here, and then we'll get to the next section. But you talk a lot about in the book about what women need to do and what men need to do. And that's going to come in about another 5 minutes or so. I want to get there. But before we get there, you talk about what organizations need to do.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So I think one of the biggest gaps that we've seen over the last couple of years is that organizations are very, very quick to say to the head of HR, and I know there's a lot of HR directors listening here, or the head of DI, fix this problem. So they go out and they're like, how are we supposed to fix this problem? And so training is part of it, but that seems to be the first place that most people go. And training is fine, but you know, it's like anything. If you give people new skills, but they go back to the same old environment, they're not going to be able to use their new skills. So there's got to be cultural and process changes aligned with those new skills so that people can enact them in a way that makes it easy. So organizations have to look at the operational and strategic challenges that they need to face. We look at this as a strategic problem, because the way I always say it is that you are leaving talent on the table if you are not inclusive. And one of the best ways to figure it out is look up at the senior leadership and look what they look like. If they all look the same, then you're definitely not inclusive. It's just, unless the division or the who gets what talent is basically divided by demographics, then you're not leveraging all the talent that you have, especially when at the bottom of organizations, it's mainly 50-50 when you think about gender. And so organizations have to first swallow hard and say, okay, clearly we're not doing something right. What is it that we need to change? And they need to take a hard look at their culture and their processes and fix it. So let's just take an example on HR. So a lot of companies are going out now and they're going to go, all right, we're going to go to the historically black colleges and we're going to go hire people from there. And so then they go and then they don't make it through the interview process. Well, we know we got the candidates, but they didn't make it through. Because what ends up happening is organizations forget to look at the whole process. You got to look at the entire journey of hiring and look at every step of the way and look at where bias shows up. What about the resume criteria? What about the interview process? What about the decision-making process? What about the onboarding process? Every one of those steps of the way can get very challenging for people, and bias shows up everywhere. I'll give you an example. So there was this one organization that we worked with several years ago that, as part of their hiring process, they brought everybody to this massive, at the end of the day, because they did these big group hires, they brought people to this networking event with the senior leaders. But they, so basically the people who had already gotten the skills, which are people who are in the higher level colleges, because that's what they their whole life they've gotten this privilege of being able to learn these skills at a young age, versus you get people who come from, say, a less well-known college with that doesn't have as many of those skills. Those people felt really uncomfortable, didn't know what to do, didn't know how to handle it. So of course they weren't hired. Well, the problem wasn't the fact that those people didn't know the skills. The problem was, why on earth are you using a process that requires these skills, which may not be necessary to be successful in the job? So that's an example of reflecting upon the processes that you use and then saying, how might bias show up here? I don't see very many organizations doing that kind of reflective work. They're doing the stuff that says, let's send everybody through unconscious bias training. Let's go start hiring from some different places, and then and that's it. That's not going to move the needle.
It is not that simple, as they say, right? It is not that simple. And to change cultural bias in terms of this is a bigger and takes a much larger plan. And that's why we're talking to you about it today and why people should get your book. So, Jody, we're going to take a break. We're going to go to commercials because, like you, we have to make a profit. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and podcasting on your national podcast channel. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Rhett Rasmussen of besthotgrill.com. Gift giving occurs year-round, whether for birthdays, holidays, or a special expression of thanks to your best clients and customers. Of course you want to show your love and gratitude, but you also want to give a gift that provides a positive image of you and your organization. Solaire infrared grills from besthotgrill.com are both practical and unforgettable. Made in the USA, Solaire has a grill for most budgets, but more importantly, Solaire delivers the wow that everybody likes to receive in a gift. Impressive out of the box, and even more so in use, the Solaire infrared grills are the gift of value that will build relationships. With every great tasting, juicy meal enjoyed from their Solaire, they'll think of you. Step up your gift giving. Learn more about the amazing Solaire infrared grills at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and presented by cmacareer.com. and verrill-law.com. You know, HR Power Hour is now on your national podcast channel. We podcast on Apple iPods. We podcast on Pandora, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. Of course, you can always listen on the HRPowerHour.com or, of course, on this station, 100.5 FM. Listen, click, like, and get yourself educated. It's what we do. So today, of course, we are talking with our guest, Jody Detchen. She is the author. That's right, author. Do you got that? Someone who's really smart you should pay attention to. The Next Smart Step. See, even again, I had the word smart in it. Jody had the word in it. How to Overcome Gender Stereotypes and Build a Stronger Organization. You and Kelly Watson obviously wrote this book. It's your second book. Congratulations, by the way. I think it's awesome when authors continue to grow and build. It's why I do a show. I don't write. It's just how I do, right? Some people talk. Some people write. It's what we do. I'm very excited to have you on the show today because one of the things that I learned about this book and in understanding it is the fact that you really do have action steps in this.
Yeah.
We talked about in the last segment at the end how organizations, right, how organizations need to and what they need to do. One of the things I want to just finish up on that is how do you measure it?
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, we just did a podcast on this ourselves, a little webinar. And basically, the thing that we always chuckle about is that people look at diversity and inclusion and they run from measurement because everybody's afraid of, oh my gosh, affirmative action, we can't measure this stuff. And yet everything else in business we measure. So we've got to be able to measure inclusion as well, because that's going to be our metric for how we're progressing. So one of the things, for example, we have over 40 measures that we look at when we work with organizations so we can really define where the problem is. Because the other thing that we understand about organizations is they're not, you probably don't have all the problems. You probably only have problems in one area, like in promotion or in sponsorship. So you need to measure it. So for example, one of the things we measure is called velocity of promotion. And velocity of promotion says how fast are people moving up the organization. And so you can look at this and you can look at it by different categories. You can look at it by gender. You can look at it by race. You can look at it by experience level. And you can start to see how in certain, like for example, in one organization we looked at, the white men were moving much faster up the pipeline than all the other categories. So right there, it tells you we've got a problem. This is not a, and you can also do it, by the way, you can do it at departmental level, you can do it at team level, you can do it at the organizational level, BU level. So that way you can start to pinpoint where is the challenge. But you don't do it as a stick. You do it as a measurement tool. Where are we? And then you enact changes to be able to fix that. So velocity of promotion is faster for men. Why? So then you can go back and you can say, what are some of the categories that are helping that? So for example, it could be, how often are you in front of a key client? How often are you actually presenting? How often are you given a stretch assignment? We know through research what these categories are, and you can measure those. And then you can see, oh, wow, well, what I see is that the people who get the key clients or the people that get the opportunities are white men. So no wonder they're having a faster move up. They're getting the opportunities that build that. Okay, so now we have to go back and say, all right, how are we allocating that? Oh, we're not really allocating this in an overt way. We're doing it by gut feel. So this manager kind of likes working with this guy over here because they went to the same college, so he just always brings them along. Oh, so now we have to think about allocation of those tasks so that way we can be more equitable around that. Once then, all of a sudden, now we know what to fix and we go out and fix it. Measurement allows us to pinpoint where the problem is. And then over time, we can continue to measure it like a dashboard so that we can see whether our intervention worked and what the impact was. The other thing I'll say is that the other thing that measurement does is, especially as we do it at the departmental level or the BU level, we can start to experiment. So we can do ABC testing, we can pilot, and then we can measure how successful our intervention was. And then if it was successful, then we can roll it out. So we have this opportunity to be just like any other operational change that we use. And that's the key, that's what measurement gives us.
There's no question you have to have measurement or you can't have results. That's right. Just a fact. So yep. I think the challenge organizations talk about is the fact that, you know, what is the right measurement for us? Because size,
right,
company, demographics of the area are certainly something that you have to look at.
Right.
And you certainly see it in some of the manufacturing where they struggle to look at that area. And it's just, again, what they hire and where they need to hire it from. So these are things that you obviously take into account when you're measuring, correct?
Yeah, so you have to look at the external. For example, you can look at, as you sort of talk about manufacturing, but when you look at entry-level manufacturing, it's actually pretty gender equal in most places. So for example, let's just take if in New Hampshire, for example, maybe it's not as gender equal, but if you go down to Alabama, it is gender equal. So you not only have to look at the regional piece, you have to look at what might be happening in other places in the country as well, because maybe they've learned something that isn't, that you don't know about in that region. So you can't, you have to be very careful about the benchmarking that you do.
No, I'll that makes perfect sense in terms of it. So, you know, one of the things, as I promised the audience, and I don't want to run out of time this segment, is tips on what women need to do and what men need to do. We have about 4 minutes. So if you could give some really solid tips of what they need to do so they can have takeaways right here today, that's what we need.
So the first thing both men and women can do is to start to identify their unconscious assumptions about themselves. So you need to say, I'm like, for example, I use the example of mansplaining. I'm mansplaining. What am I assuming? Or women, I'm not, I'm doing everything. I'm saying yes to everything and I'm not getting anything done. Go back to fundamental principles. What's the underlying assumption? And then reframe that assumption. What's another way for me to look at that? And that then opens up possibilities. And then once you open up possibilities, then you can start trying new skills and practicing those skills. So for women, it could be, for example, saying no to a task, or saying, actually, I don't want to take notes in the meeting. I'm actually going to ask the questions in the meeting. And even though that makes you really, really nervous, you go out and you take that risk and you practice it. For men, it could be, let me keep my mouth shut in the meeting and not say anything and try that out. And you see how that feels and you practice it and you realize it's a skill and you practice and practice and practice. The next thing I think from a practical perspective that I think both men and women can do, especially in positions of power, is start to think about sponsorship. We're big fans of sponsorship because sponsorship is when you put your own personal social capital on the line to help advance someone's career. So the question is, who are you sponsoring and how are you sponsoring those people? And then really trying to figure out, how can I broaden my criteria in terms of who I sponsor and take a risk with maybe somebody that I wouldn't normally have done? And try that out. So in essence, what I think the biggest takeaway is, you're going to have to get uncomfortable. Reframe those assumptions and get uncomfortable and stay in that uncomfortable space as you practice the skill to get more comfortable.
You know, it's one of those things that if you don't try, you're not going to learn.
Right.
And I do know that certainly organizations think about the fact of, well, you know, we're certainly going to, we want to do this. You know, I am a full believer that 99% of all organizations want to do the right thing. I've really not met many owners or leaders that have said, no, I want to do the wrong thing. You know, it's just not, it's just not something that happens. It's just either they don't know how.
Yeah.
Or they choose because they are comfortable in the way they do things to just do what they've always done because they've always been successful at it. And in some ways, you can't blame them for that initial assessment, right, of what they do. But this does pose the question for them of, what are the risks to them? And as we wrap up this segment, tell me what the risks are for them and how they can overcome them.
So we really identify a bunch of different risks of not doing it. So the risks of not doing it are quite large. So you've got, you know, you've got legal risk. That's the one everybody's afraid of. I'm going to get sued. But the reality is, if you start on this process and show that you're actually sincere about it, that legal risk, you're actually diminishing that legal risk. The second one is opportunity risk. Everybody thinks that it's the safer risk to promote that which they already know. But what you're actually doing is you're missing all the opportunity, all those ideas, all that impact that would have been given if you had a better person in that role are gone. So that risk is pretty high. There's also the productivity risk. You might have somebody that's less efficient or less effective in that role. So that's more costly for you to have a less effective person in that role. You also have turnover risk because the people who leave are the people that are good. They almost, in all cases, So why would you risk having more turnover by not really leveraging your talent? And then the last one is stagnation. People give up. They don't see that they have the opportunity to move up. So they give up, which means they become less productive. So these are all risks of not going down the inclusion route. I actually think the biggest risk of all is that more and more companies are seriously going down this route. And we really think because it's such an operational change process, it's a 3 to 5 year process to actually implement it fully. So the longer an organization waits, they are going to be 3 to 5 years plus their wait time away from being competitive. Their competitors
that's why they
are
should
doing
start
it.
Now, right? I mean, that's why they should
start now.
At least start now. Start now thinking about it. Start now reaching out and making those decisions. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and podcasting nationally all across the country. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and ferrell-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. Again, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. We're talking with Jody Dechen. She is the author of this amazing book we've been talking about today. That's right, you heard me, amazing book, because what it does is it tells you the roadmap. And that's the hard part, the roadmap, the next smart step, how to overcome gender stereotypes and build a stronger organization. As we wrap up today, Jody, here this last segment, what are the two things you want HR professional business leaders and C-suite professionals to think about and in regards to what the takeaway from today is or what the takeaway of what they would get from your book?
I think the first one is that this needs to become a strategic imperative. This can't be a little side project. You can't just say, do this as part of your regular job. This has to be a strategic imperative, just like you would any other strategic initiative. There's money being left on the table. So that's number one. The second one is that the process that you use in order to solve this problem is the same process you use with every other strategic approach. You know how to do this. You can use third parties like ours to help bring in the objectivity and the expertise and the facilitation process, but the process itself is one that actually you're quite familiar with. Everybody's done a strategic plan and has implemented that strategic plan. We've made operational changes. We know how to do this. So let's take away the fear and say, this matters. We're going to dedicate and invest resources in it. We're going to start today. And we are going to do this because we believe in it and we know how to do it. It's okay.
And that's really the end of the day, what the real need is. It's just okay, right? It's okay to do this. It's the right thing to do. It takes time. It takes energy. But hey, everything else does too, right? It's about looking at it and making sure that you have your priorities in place. You know, Jody, you've been doing this a while. Tell us a little bit about Orange Grove, the organization that you work for and or work with or own. I'm sorry, put in the right term. Tell me a little bit about it.
So we really founded this because Kelly and I have these really strong operational and strategic backgrounds, and we really felt like there was this gap in the market about leveraging that kind of perspective on this challenge. And the deeper we get into it, the more we realize that that's the case. And so what we try to do is we are really, really practical. We will find out what where your challenge is in relation to this challenge, into relation to diversity and inclusion. We will help give you a very clear roadmap on how to get there. We know how to do this. And then we'll give you that objectivity, right? We'll bring in that objective expertise lens so that it's not you internally trying to do this, because that can be problematic for people being honest. We can bring that objective lens. And then the second area that we really, really work on is how to build the inclusion skills that people need. 21% of leaders in our surveys don't have the skills. So we both help the operational change as well as the skill set development to help organizations. So we are all about the practical. Even our training is practical. You walk out of there with skill sets. It's all about let's get this done. We are not the kind of people that want to live at your organization for 5 years. We want to empower you all to get the job done.
It has been a pleasure speaking with you today, Jody. Again, Jody Detchen, she is the author of the book, The Next Smart Step, How to Overcome Gender Stereotypes and Build a Stronger Organization. Go to Amazon.com or any other bookstore, I'm assuming, across the all of them, and buy this book. Of course, you can go to HRPowerHour.com after the show. You will be able to click on and meet Jody and certainly have a conversation with her in regards to sending her an email. You'll be able to click on the book itself and purchase it at that time. Jody, again, pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and podcasting nationally. We'll be right back with the HR Tip of the Week.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Doug Currier from Verrill. Today I want to talk for a moment about the concept of reasonable accommodations. Something like 50 million people in the workforce today in the United States have a condition that is considered a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Many require one or more accommodations in order to be successful in their job. We find that often litigation arises when employers are accused of failing to provide reasonable accommodations. There's a process that an employer needs to follow when an employee or someone on the employee's behalf asks for a reasonable accommodation. I don't have time here today to describe the entire process, but there are two things that I want to emphasize because they're too often overlooked. First, the accommodation process requires an individualized assessment, which means you cannot make assumptions about what an employee can or cannot do now or in the future, nor can you make assumptions about what accommodations will or will not work. For example, you cannot just declare that hearing a person has a bad shoulder that they can't do the job. You don't know how bad their shoulder is. You don't know what adaptive equipment might be available. You don't know when physical therapy will be helpful enough that the restrictions might be lifted. Second, you need to have a thoughtful and specific reason why an accommodation may not be possible. It's not enough to say the accommodation will have a negative impact on operations. You need to be able to explain with particulars what that negative impact will be. For example, if the restriction is you cannot lift over 10 pounds, you need to have a good understanding of how often it really is required in the shift for that person to lift over 10 pounds. And what impact it would have on the operation to have other employees stop what they're doing to cover the lifting obligation for the employee in question. To further discuss reasonable accommodations in the workplace, we encourage you to contact a member of Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.